Today, we're going back to series one, to the emotions and relationship strains episode. For me, this is one of the most powerful episodes we've ever recorded. If you're in the thick of fertility treatment and feeling a bit guilty, shamed, disconnected, this episode is for you. Sean and I talk about the real stuff that men usually don't talk about. And if you need some additional support, head over to the Nexus community. All details are in the show notes. Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support, and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, episode number 6. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. It's episode number 6, but it's also episode number 1 of this new year, 2024.
Happy New Year, man. Oh, we did it together.
Yeah, synchronicity, that.
Happy New Year, man.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Did you have a nice Christmas?
I did, yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, you get to the point where it's lovely. It gets a bit cabin fevery after a while, especially with like this horrendous weather that we've had. So yeah, I'm glad to get back outside as well. So yeah, how about yourself?
Yeah, it was really nice, mate. I felt the same. Like we had, like there was like 4 days where it just rained, and it was just after Christmas, and like, you know, Seb's got a new bike and things, and wanted to get out and do stuff with him, but we just haven't been able to. Cabin fever set in. Luckily, the weather broke, and we managed to get out a little bit. But then it was New Year, and that rolls around, and then the New Year starts, and you're off again, aren't you? So
here we are. Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, well, I've got three main ones. The first one is just to continue doing the work that we're doing. It's not really a resolution. It's something I just want to continue doing and getting stronger and better at, you know, help support those guys going or facing fertility difficulties. It's what we do, isn't it? It's what we want to do. That's the main objective. The second one is to be present in the moment, each moment. Like I found last year that sometimes family time was affected by, you know, client time or thinking about what we'd be doing on the pod, or when we're doing the pod, the phone will ring and, you know, it's family. Even though that's always very important, it's trying to get everything in its box so I know when I'm doing things and I can engage fully in one task rather than try and do three at a time. And then the second one, third one is Jen basically challenged me not to eat Haribo for a year. So because I'm a bit of a Haribo fiend, I can eat a lot of Haribo. It's probably like my one dietary downfall. For example, I got a kilo tub of Haribo for Christmas, and it was gone in 5 days.
Wow.
So it's like, right, we need to, I mean, I don't always eat Haribo like that. I am very sensible most of the time, but Jen was like, I bet you can't do it for a year. I was like, yeah, I can. And then I realized what had come out of my mouth. But that's it. Yeah. So that's the third one. That's more of a fun one, isn't it? I actually think I'm going to struggle more not eating Haribo on a day-to-day basis than I did when I gave up drinking, because I wanted to drink at the weekends or when times got stressed. I generally like to snack on Haribo, which isn't the best thing for a PT. So it's a positive in my world. What about you, mate?
well, on that note, actually, I'd say congratulations, because you've just gone past your 1 year alcohol free, haven't you?
Yeah, man. Cheers. Thanks.
Nice. I mean, that's a huge achievement. I mean, like, we spoke about it, didn't we? I was saying, like, no, I'd love to do it. I don't know if I've got big enough why, but actually, that's probably just me. It's like the self-limiting belief and a bit of a handbrake, really. I know that I should at least, like, cut down a bit and stop using it as a reward. Oh, today's been a difficult day or whatever, and just having a glass of wine or whatever. But yeah, and you know, generally, like, my equivalent of Haribo is chocolate. I can nail that in no time. So that's definitely something I'll be cutting down. But I don't tend to set resolutions as such. I tend to have a theme for the year. So last year, 2023, my theme was growth. And I don't mean around the midriff. It was generally, it was around in various areas. I set goals kind of for the year and just chalk them off bit by bit, really. And I definitely did what I set out to do last year, which is good. I haven't had a chance to sit down and plan this year's theme or my goals, but I'll be doing that next week because now the kids are back at school and get a bit more breathing space. So I'm going to do what I did last year, take myself to my favourite cafe, sit down with my diary and my little planner and just map out the year, really.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you said there is really important, actually, because we think about these resolutions of things to change when I think sometimes you can look at it a bit negatively. Like, actually, just think about it, about how you just want to improve, you know, how do you develop yourself? And that's what you've just explained, isn't it?
Yeah.
You constantly think about, what do I need to change about myself? It's like, well, there's nothing wrong with you, but how can you make yourself that little bit better?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, mate, I hope the planning session goes well. What will you be eating while you're there, or is it just a cup of coffee?
I try and stick to just coffee, but they do really good little pastries and stuff. But
you're never going to win that battle, mate.
I know. Well, what I want to do more of, and like, it's like you hit a great point there about presence, actually. But at the same time, I want to, when I do something, when I go to make a decision, or for example, if I go to eat or drink something, think about me tomorrow or next week or the month or a year ahead. Like, rather than just going, okay, I want that now, I'm going to start thinking more about the tomorrow me.
Like, yeah.
That person is the one who's going to look back and go, I wish I hadn't done that. And so, but again, it's always trying to find that difficult balance of remaining present as well. But there's definitely something to be said for just bearing in mind the future you as well. And that's what I think I'll be bringing in a bit more this year, because like those small gradual improvements, like 1% better, like kind of every day, a week or whatever, and just working towards the best version of myself and getting things on track, whether it's work, health, whatever.
I think this is a good point, mate. It's none of us are ever a finished article. You know, it's about just making sure that you're always taking one step in front of the other, one day at a time, with a goal at the end of it. You know, and that applies to like fertility journeys as well. You know what the end is, or what you want it to be, but actually how you tread that path is going to be completely different. So there's a lot of things, similarities, isn't there, between a New Year's resolution and a fertility journey. Like, you can make a decision to be that will positively impact your life and make a better you in the long run. That's definitely, we've talked about that before, how that actually we feel like we're better people for going through our fertility journeys. You can't see that at the time. You can't see it at all. But as you process it and go through it, it's definitely an element of truth in that.
You know? Yeah, 100%.
So, well, now we've done that. We've done the welcomes. We're all good. We better move on to today's topic. So, what we're going to talk about today is the experiences or the emotions that we felt in relation to our partners as we went through our fertility treatment. And these are the type of emotions we were talking about. Are like shame, guilt, embarrassment. Because you've talked to men, I've talked to guys, and it's that it comes up often, this feeling like you've let someone down, there's shame in the relationship. And it's really important that all men listening to this know that every man that I've ever talked to about this that has, you know, been open enough has expressed this feeling of, you know, feeling like they've let their partner down. Or something in those lines. You know, they might not say that sentence, but it's a real thing, and it's important that we talk about it.
Yeah, that's it. It's very common, like that guilt. And that does obviously happen on both sides. I know that that females who are having trouble conceiving feel the same towards their male partners. But when it comes to our side, you know, there's definitely that additional factor of male ego as well, because what we've talked about before, like societal expectations and kind of upbringing, and we're meant to believe, or we're led to believe, that we've got the easy bit, and that's been echoed in fertility treatment and in science, is that it's long been assumed that men don't really have a problem, and that it doesn't, sperm health doesn't decline over age, which we've talked about in a previous episode, which is nonsense.
Mm.
So yeah, all of those things actually just, they compound and they add up, and they really add on to that guilt and that shame.
Yeah, and it's important that men that are listening to this know that's what this conversation is going to be about, or what these conversations are about is breaking down the stigma and that society thought of, you know, it is something to be shameful of, when it's really not. It is an ever-growing issue, and it's only going to increase. So, you know, let's just crack on and have this conversation, man. I think it'd be a good place to start, maybe like where we kind of, or what we kind of felt when we initially kind of tweaked. I mean, and this is going to sound a bit broken maybe, but there was that big part of me that was in pure denial when I first started going through my fertility journey. But then there was a moment when I realized the impact it was having on Jen. And for me, that started when there was two main things. One, where she started injecting. You know, I had those thoughts of, this is because of me. She doesn't deserve this. And then we had very long conversations about our relationship, but we can get onto in a bit. And the second one was, well, I remember the day that she went for her first egg collection and seeing her after it. And she was in so much like discomfort, and I felt horrendous. And all I could do is remember thinking, this is my fault. This is my fault. She's going through this. And there was that real kind of guilt, the guiltiness of her having to go through it. I mean, now on reflection, I know that my infertility had nothing to do with anything I had done. You know, this is a condition for me that occurred naturally. And to blame myself that I had nothing to do with, or a reason of causing it, was unfair on me. But at that time, the presence, those feelings were there. And it was heartbreaking. And it really put a strain on our relationship, because the more I saw her struggling or having to have injections, the more I kind of pulled out of the relationship without even knowing, both physically and mentally, like we hugged more and, you know, we didn't have as much sex and things like that, because I was going down my depressive dip. And we stopped communicating, or I stopped communicating, where now I know they were completely the wrong things to do. But at the time, they were like the natural thing for me to do. So basically what I'm trying to get at is, men need to be aware that it's a very natural thing to think like this, but don't blame yourself for something that you've had no purposeful intention of doing. Like, you didn't purposely want to be infertile. So take the support from your partner and work together on it and move forward and support her where you can.
I can echo everything you said, and there were certain points during our treatment, and like I mentioned in my episode, like for example when Jenna got ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome and she was extremely poorly. So not only could we not progress with our treatment, and for an indeterminate amount of time, it's just when she gets better, and it's like, when will that be? But you just get, you feel like you're going back to square one again. And then seeing her so ill, and thinking, I've put her in this situation. We wouldn't be there here if it wasn't for me. And that's an extremely tough place to be. And it's like I mentioned before, I think as well, is that Jenna had a massive needle phobia going into our fertility treatment. But suddenly you're at home and you've got all the needles there, the meds, and you're having to like literally use them every day, and it's getting over that hurdle. But again, just seeing her anxiety of the first one in particular, kind of having to do it, and thinking, God, you know, it shouldn't be like this. The only thing that she should be getting stuck in her is me, and then make it. That's the simple route. But unfortunately, we had to go down this shitty route of fertility treatment. And it's really hard. And like you said, there's points where you kind of, I withdrew as well. It taught me a lot about not only myself, and our next episode is going to be more on how we like kind of pulled ourselves through this and it came to acceptance. So I don't want to tread on the next episode's toes too much, but I did. It was at these points where I was at the lowest, and seeing how hard it was on Jenna, that I really did have a better understanding of relationships, actually, and both as an individual and as a couple. And it really stuck out to me then how important it is. Yes, you're in a partnership, you're in a relationship, and there are certain points that it's important to do together. But actually, it really showed me the importance of personal responsibility, of looking after myself in order to look after us as a couple. It's like making a, you know, almost like a promise that I promise to look after myself mentally, physically, and emotionally, as long as you look after yourself physically, mentally, emotionally. And then together, we will rise together and become closer, because when you're both going in that same direction, it's a positive thing. But when we were both moving in other directions, like what you explained, like you going in a hole, I felt that as well. And Jenna's trying to progress forward with the treatment. It's like the opposite ends of a magnet trying to push them together, and you're pushing apart. And
yeah.
They were the times where I felt most distant, because I was being most distant. So a lot of getting myself out of that was, like, again, to echo what you said, was coming to terms with the fact that it wasn't my fault. And that was huge in eradicating that guilt, because I'd put a lot of blame on myself. I'd put... I had apportioned everything, all the reasons for us being there, on myself. But then it was really important to acknowledge that we were not there through any actions that I had taken, any purposeful actions. It's just a complete and unfortunate factor in life that we ended up in a situation, which so many people do, tens of millions of people do worldwide. And we were one of them. So first of all, it's about acknowledging it's not my fault. That's huge. And then acknowledging that I needed help, whether that was self-help, help from Jenna, help from others. But most importantly, acknowledging that help was not weakness, by saying, I can't do this on my own at this stage. That is not a weakness at all. That is actually a strength. That's a real, really powerful thing as a man, especially, to say, do you know what? I need help now. To acknowledge that, and to then openly say it, do it, and seek it out. That's a superpower.
Mm. That first part of acceptance, of understanding that it's not your fault, is the most important thing. But it takes time to get there. You have to go through that process. You know, for me, it was the fact of I was in that denial state, and then I had horrendous guilt. And then it wasn't until we got to our third cycle, when I realized there was, you know, no more money left in the pot, I kind of took it upon myself to go, you know what? Actually, I've got to take control of this. I find myself in this situation. And even with that, just that positive thought, it helped me change my mindset to the fact of, actually, I am in this situation, but I'm going to do everything I can to make it as positive as possible, to have a positive impact on it. And that in turn, you know, impacted me and Jen's relationship. massively positively. We sat down, and it was just before I started my counselling, when I was really at my lowest. We made a plan about how we were going to rebuild our relationship. And it was things like we started to plan in when we were going to go for dinners. We planned in when we were going to exercise together. We planned in when we were going to have time apart as well, doing things that we wanted to do. Like, I used to love going and watch the rugby. I still do. But Jen's got no interest in that. But that was an important part for me to feel like me. And her almost saying, you do that. It's an invisible layer of a relationship that you can't see. You know you've got the approval of your partner to go and do something you love to do because they love you and they want to see you happy. You know, and we kind of did it like that. So you have to kind of be really firm, but fair with yourself, understand that the situation you're in isn't your fault. Reach out for help. I did with my therapy, but also with my partner, with Jen. And together we managed to pull our relationship back. And it's, you know, I wouldn't be without her now. She's my absolute rock. And we very rarely argue, we laugh, we giggle. But at the time, if you went back 10 years ago, it was a completely different scenario. It wasn't a different relationship because we loved each other, but we'd responding differently to the stimulus we were receiving, especially me. And I think sometimes as a man, we forget how vital our affection is to our partners. Like, it is really important. It's not just us that kind of like a cuddle and, you know, like our wives to cook dinner for us and things like that. If that's what, that's what makes you smile. It's they like it too. And if you cut that off because you're feeling guilty or feeling like it's your fault, it does have a negative impact. So it's important to make that recognition and make the plans to kind of bind your relationship back together if you feel like it's starting to thread.
Yeah. Well, I this is our opinion, but I'm no expert, but I don't think that women want us as men to be this immovable object that's completely devoid of emotions. Like, that's what kind of bro science or all this like nonsense on the internet is telling us, but and actually in previous generations as well, because men were supposed to be strong, silent, and just provide. But I don't think women want that. I think they want you to open up, share vulnerabilities, allow them in so that they can help when you need it. But also, I think it's good, like we've both said, is they also want you to be able to solve problems yourself, to acknowledge them and not ignore them. And show that independence and that strength to do that, but also to allow them in to help you as and when you need. Because I think when you're shutting people out, you're robbing them of the chance to help you. And that's a great honor. And that's why you choose life partners, to allow them to be there when you need them, to stop you when you fall, and or at least to cushion the blow if you're going to go, you know, because it's inevitable that life throws up challenges. But it's about being there as a partnership. And again, I love what you said about 10 years ago as a couple. We're the same. Like, how things would have played out 10 years ago are the same for us. 10 years ago, we were different people. We were a different couple. Life happens. And thankfully, in our case, the infertility pulled us closer together and made us like rock solid, as I know it did for you and Jen as well. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. It can drive people apart, as can other challenges in life. But I think as long as you're working through things individually as a couple, talking, communicating, then it's going to help you progress forward and together and bring that bond as well that you will need.
Yeah, I mean, I touched on that point that you made about women like to see us vulnerable. Like, Jen likes to see if something happens and I'm happy about it, like if I start like emotionally, a tear runs down my cheek, for example, because the situation I'm in is really happy. Like, she doesn't look at me and go, what a weirdo. That brings us, she can see that actually I'm enjoying that situation. it's situational, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, if someone knocked on our door and was angry, she'd want me to act as the protector at that moment. We talked about this last episode, didn't we? It's all about situational. You know, it's okay to be fragile at the right times. And even at the wrong times sometimes, if you need to learn how to deal with that emotion. But yeah, I found that our relationship only grew with my ability to show my fragileness, my sensitivity. And it's not there all the time. Like, I'm a typical bloke. I leave my clothes on the floor and it winds my wife up, and I get grumpy for no apparent reason, when actually all I am is hungry. I sometimes make inappropriate jokes that my wife tells me off for, because of my sense of humor is different to hers. But at the same time, if she needs someone to listen to, when the children are asleep, we sit down, we have that conversation. If that can't happen, you know, we find a quiet place and have a chat, even if it's in the middle of the day, because she needs to talk something through. If I've had a stressful day at work, you know, she can tell, and she'd be like, we'll talk later, and we'll sit down and we'll have a talk it through. And she's my justification. And, you know, she makes me, what I might see as a situation, she sees, or a negative situation, she sees a positive, she's completely differently. So it's all about communication and being open. But yeah, definitely being more open with your emotions can only have a positive impact.
I went into the fertility struggles as a completely typical bloke. And again, this is something that attacked my ego and identity more, which we'll talk about next week and how I got out of it. But I came out of it a different person. And part of that was acknowledging what I was feeling and what I was thinking as well. And by sharing that with Jenna, it allowed her to learn what I needed, because, yeah, you know, it's all about learning. And she initially would try to, because she was a long way further ahead than me with kind of like personal development and self-help, because she, and I've said it many times before on other podcasts, for example, that she doesn't mind me saying this, she struggled with depression for years before we went into the fertility issues. So she was already working her own way through that, and she kind of knew what some of the answers were that I needed. But I wasn't in a place where I was willing to listen, and she would push, and it would push me further away. So she had to learn and adapt how I was reacting, and then suddenly then take a more gentle approach, gentle nudges. And because she knew the key was essentially would be to open up, whether it's to her or anyone else. Mm. But that was the opposite of what I was willing to do at certain stages. And she'd be like, she stopped pushing with that. And that's just one example. And it's about, but you know, isn't that's a huge thing of relationships, is that we're learning each other constantly. We are still young. We were young at this point. We were very young at that point. You know, when I look back, look at photos of that time, I think, God, who's that child? But, you know, we're going through literally a life-changing situation. But we are discovering ourselves, and we're discovering ourselves as a couple, and it's that growth of growing through it, growing past it, growing onwards through life.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. And you know, when you've reached that point in a relationship, like I remember sitting there one day and looking at Jen and just knowing that our relationship couldn't be any stronger than it is. Like, it is strong. But in order to make something tough, you have to challenge it. And our fertility journey was without doubt, one of the top three of the challenging things that we've kind of come across. It's definitely, you know, one or two, you know, and it made us stronger, both as individuals and as a couple. So she stuck around for a good few years. So I must be doing something right, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's stress testing and forming. Like, I don't even know if I'm going to use the right term here. I'm just, as you were saying that, the kind of the metaphor that was coming to my head was steel. Like, so you heat it up, you're banging it, you're bashing it about, and it forms into that solid situation. And that's just the way my weird brain works. But that is what came to my mind about a relationship, is in those hot, really stressful moments, you're essentially forming the strong bond going forward. And that's what we hope. That's what we hope, that we can help other people behind us, because, as I said, unfortunately, I know some people that it does drive apart, but if people can learn how to deal with this as individuals, as a couple, and because what we want is people to not have something as shit and as unfortunate as this to drive relationships apart.
Yeah, sadly it does. Some relationships it does, because it is so challenging. And that doesn't mean that there was anything wrong with that relationship. I think it was more the fact of, in that moment of time, it couldn't sustain the stress that was on it. I've talked openly about how I said to Jen at one point, I was like, you could just go off and have a child with anyone. Like, I wouldn't, it would break my heart, but you can leave. And she said, no, I want children. If I have children, I want them with you. Like, you are the cornerstone of my life. Without you, the house would fall down, So, and that was a big thing for me to hear. Mm. I felt better after hearing that. And it wasn't no prompt from me. I didn't, say, this is what I need you to tell me. She said the right thing at the right time. And it was probably, the catalyst that got me to the point of, I need to do something about this, because she's really prepared to stand by me, despite having an easier option, what I perceived to be the easy option at the time. And it wouldn't have been really, because if we'd separated at that time, one, we don't know where we'd be now, but two, there'd always be that question, wouldn't there?
Yeah.
What if?
I did the same, and I said the same to Jenna. I was like, if you want to tap out now, it's fine. Go and find someone who can give you what you want. And her response was similar to your Jen's, in that she reassured me that she married me for me.
Mm.
And that's what helped me set me on the way to acceptance, is knowing that my relationship, or our relationship, I should say, wasn't, but my position as her husband in our relationship was not at risk. She married me for me. That's what she said. Everything about me as a person, not my sperm or lack of.
It's a really powerful thing to hear, but you have to go through that difficult conversation. Like, it's really not easy. Like, confronting something that is so, you said it as damaging your ego. Your ego takes a big knock. The person that you perceive yourself to be, you're suddenly not. Well, you are. You're exactly the same person. You've just got a little bit more information.
Mm.
And it's about, understanding that, once again, we're going back to the first point we've kind of brought up, it's not your fault. So don't beat yourself up about it. Process it. Take that time. Talk to your partner. Come up with a plan. And put it on the table, be really open and honest. This is how I'm feeling. And then together, it doesn't feel great when you're going through it. It feels like you're patching holes in a bucket that just won't stop leaking. But eventually, you fill the holes and the bucket's new. It's fine. But it's just not hard. It's just not easy when you're going through it. It's extremely hard. It's that thing about bravery, isn't it? You have to be brave. Well, what does bravery feel like? Well, it doesn't feel good. But at the end of it, you look back and go, do you know what? I made the right decision at the right time, and I'm proud of that decision.
Yeah.
Pleased with the outcome. But at the time, you feel like shit, and you just want to shut the world out and go, enough's enough. But you don't. You muddle through it, and you end up in a much better position in your relationship. So it's that's my advice to someone. If you're really kind of struggling, take a moment. Don't blame yourself. Don't blame yourself for something that you didn't have any part in playing. Like, you did nothing for this to happen. Sit down with your wife or your partner, come up with a plan how you're going to keep your relationship together and stick to that plan. You know, and think about both on a relationship in terms of a partner level, you and your partner, but also what do you need to do that will make you happy? Find a new hobby, return to an old hobby, play football on a Saturday night if that, or Monday night if that's what you need to, or what you used to do and you stopped doing it. Give yourself every reason to keep going.
Yeah, I think that's really important advice, is to find what you love and enjoy doing it. It gives you that escape. And again, touching on what you said about bravery, brilliant point, because what's the opposite of that is cowardice, and cowardice is shying away from those tough decisions, those tough conversations.
Yeah.
And really facing them head on. It gives you that proof. And once you overcome that, once you face something like and overcome it and move past it, then that's your proof for overcoming the next obstacle as well. And then you just keep building from there and moving on and moving forward. That's the most important thing to do, is keep moving forward. Yes, you might need to take a break in terms of like whatever it is you're doing and just recalibrate, but don't go backwards. Keep either like have your rest, move forward again.
Yeah.
Face those next challenges, because they will keep coming. Yeah, that happens in life, but then that comes down to building resilience, because unknown, unchosen suffering will happen to all of us. And for in our case, there's the fertility struggles.
I think I've said it before in the pod, but you know, it's okay to take the knee, take the moment. It's what you do when you're on your knees is the key. You know, do you lay down and just surrender, or do you get up and fight again? And my advice is always get up. Get up, keep going. Even if it takes you just a week on your knee, where you're like, do you know what? I need a week to myself. I need a week talking to my wife. I need to book in and see my therapist and talk to them. And then I'm ready for the world again.
Absolutely.
It's an incredibly powerful thing you said about it. You know, getting that help, it's empowering. Even though at the time, society makes it feel like it's the, especially for men. Men don't ask for help. Well, yes, they do. They should do. I can only say positive things about, you know, experiences where I've reached out for help. It's vital. It really is vital.
Yeah. There's a saying, isn't there? I quite like it, is that you can't pour from an empty cup. So you can't help others if you're suffering yourself and aren't at your optimal point, whether that's physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever, all three. You know, because that's infertility will attack all three of those elements.
Yeah.
So take that time to build yourself back up, and then you can better serve others, whether that's your partner, whoever else. But yeah, it's all about self-care as well as care in a relationship. So that feels like a kind of a good time to summarize, really, and to say what our top tips would be for anyone going through this individually or as a couple. So, Kieran, what would yours be?
Well, I've kind of mentioned them before, but I'm going to kind of put them in a mini conclusion, shall we say, so it makes it really clear. My first tip for a guy that's, you know, feeling the strain of this is to take some time to process and understand that it's not your fault, and the situation you find yourself in, you've played no part in terms of creating it. So it's really important that you start to let that guilt go. It's so much easier to say than to do. But if you start that thought process, gradually you'll, that guilt, that pressure, the embarrassment, the shame will start to ease. Now, to make this better is where I'm going to kind of bring in the second tip. And that's, you know, do sit down with your partner and plan about how you're going to keep your relationship together. Talk about how you're feeling in relation to them. So it's fine to sit down and say, do you know what? we're going through this fertility treatment. It's male fact. It's my fault. Not my fault, but I feel it's my fault. And I need you to understand that. I need to know how you feel. And I need this conversation. And how can we make sure that we keep our relationship together? Because I don't want it to start fraying because I'm drifting. And that's the conversation me and Jen had. It was as simple as that. And then that's when we sat down and we looked at, you know, we got the calendar out and we were like, right, so what days are we going to, say, train together? What days in this month are we going to put aside for try and forget all our fertility issues and just be Kieran and Jen and go out for dinner? Or we had like weekly cinema trips and things like that that we really stuck to and created this plan where we didn't drift apart or, in our case, pulled us back together. So get to a point where you can say to yourself that it's not your fault, accept that, and then sit down, speak to your partner really openly, honestly, and then together put a plan together where you can keep that relationship solid. That's my advice to any guy that's kind of feeling the pressures of fertility treatment on his relationship with his partner.
Mm. Yeah, great advice, mate. And yeah, I mean, actually, from the man's perspective, it's probably like you've hit the nail on the head there. So I'll perhaps do some top tips for any partners that are listening of how they can support their male partner who may be experiencing fertility issues. So I'd say, again, like you said, reiterating what we have already discussed, and that would be to provide that reassurance that his position as your partner is not at risk, because that's what they'll be feeling, that they're letting you down and that you may be looking elsewhere, or they might even say it like we both did. But that reassurance that you are with them, for who they are, not what they can provide, that's huge. That took off such a big weight off my shoulders, and like you said, it did for you as well. And unfortunately, this one's probably quite hard to hear, but you will need to be patient, because it takes time. It does take time, and we've found ourselves in holes. Those holes require climbing back out of. And I know that Jenna wanted to move forward quicker. She wanted to press the go button on things. And in my situation, for example, using donor sperm, it takes time to get to that choice. It's not something you can rush, which is important for any future children. No matter how you get there, every conversation has to be about the future children involved. And so, yeah, hard one to hard pill to swallow, but patience is really important, because in my situation, certainly when I felt that Jenna was pushing, I was recoiling further away. So it's about just taking your foot off the gas sometimes, recognizing when they might need a bit of time, and then gentle nudges in the directions that you perhaps want them to look and explore, such as talking or alternate routes to parenthood, whatever it is. Gentle nudges is key, because pushing is not the one.
I think we're all guilty of a bit of kickback in there.
Yeah.
Even now, if Jim wants me to do something, it's a gentle push, not a go and do this, because if I'm in the middle of something, it's not going down well. Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favor and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at The Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.